Welcome to Real Flix Reviews. We're like a book club for people who hate reading. This month, they're doing Grab Bags, so in the honor of Gene Wilder, I picked the movie Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. We're doing Arrow, Season 1, Episode 1, and we bring you movie news. This week, we have Jonathan Cherney, James Stevens,
Hello. And
Ryan Preston. So here's the description of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Charlie receives a golden ticket to the factory. His sweet tooth wants going into lusting candy. It turns out there's an adventure in everything. Who wrote this description?
I don't know. Did you mess it up or is it grammatically incorrect?
It's actually grammatically correct. His sweet tooth wants going into the lushing. Yeah, no, it's written weird. So one of the reasons I picked this movie is we've done a lot of the Gene Wilder movies that I love, and this was pretty much this
what
movie
was left over.
Yeah, well, not only left over, but this is one of the movies, no matter how many times I watch it, it brings a smile to my face just because this is like how snarky I expect Gene Wilder to be in real life.
Oh.
And loving and because he...
Help, cops, murder.
Yeah. That's one of the reasons my favorite thing is this movie. You know, you had that chick blowing up into a blueberry and he's like, don't stop. You know, bring her to the crushing room. Yeah. You know, this is such a great movie and I forgot it was a musical.
How did you forget this
well,
was a musical?
It's a musical in the loosest sense of a musical.
Yeah, and it's not like Cats when every scene is a giant singing thing.
Well, you do have the Oompa Loompas that do songs regularly, and you have Gene Wilder that does two.
But
is it two? Does he do two?
Yeah. No, yeah, he does. Yeah, he does two. This is such a great movie, though. I don't remember him being as snarky. That's one thing that I completely forgot the last time I watched this movie.
That's what I love about it. Candy is dandy, but liquor is quicker.
All the snide comments are so... Well, I wish I wrote them down.
One of the things I got to point out about this film is that there are many, 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 many people who quote this movie and don't know they're quoting this movie.
The most amazing thing besides that is the fact the guy who wrote the book hates this movie. Like, up to the point that he refused to watch it, allegedly.
So?
I just, like, he hated it so much because of the rewrites of it that he basically refused to sell the sequel rights.
Well, the writer of the shirt I'm wearing, The Shining, he doesn't like the Jack Nicholson version of the movie, and it is fantastic compared to the remake.
That's for damn sure.
So... I don't really care. I mean, it's true. It's true. This film is fantastic.
It is true.
So,
but, yeah, no, there's like I could care less about what the writer thinks. It's not his anymore. You know,
exactly.
once Gene Wilder did it, once they put it out, it became in the possession of every kid who ever saw this movie.
Yeah.
You know, Gene Wilder's kind of famously given a you know, talked about how about every 4.5 years it'd be like a new crop of youngsters that would see this movie and they'd see him on the street and, you know, their eyes would light up and, you know, they'd want to run up and say hi or some of them were too nervous to. And Gene Wilder, I mean, really was almost too sweet for the business that he was in.
Yes, he was.
Just the sweetest, most kind-hearted person. You hear him talk for 2 minutes on an interview. You're like, oh, I want this guy to be like my grandfather. You know, he's
just
the sweetest guy of all time. But then this movie, you know, even the things that we sort of perceived as sort of dark, you know, back in the day and you know, or even today when you kind of rewatch it, all sort of has a purpose. And it, I mean, it's just one of the most beautiful stories ever told. And there's not one person... Seriously, at 30 years old, 10 years old, 50, 80, those doors to that candy factory open, you're 10 years old.
And by the way, this movie holds up a lot better than the Goonies do.
Yeah. Oh, man, this movie holds up so perfectly.
I mean, one of my favorite lines in this film is the suspense is terrible. Hope it lasts. And he's sitting there eating a chocolate bar as he's watching this kid get sucked up the chocolate tube. That was real chocolate, by the way.
I love that scene's too is funny too because instead of worrying about the kid, it's like no, he's contaminating my chocolate.
He's contaminating my chocolate. I have to redo all of this.
And then you have Grandpa Joe. Do you remember how I told you how a bullet goes out of a gun?
Yeah. Watch. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, Gene Wilder's performance in this film is timeless. I mean, his dancing, his singing, his line delivery, the way that he was able to deliver so many lines so monotoned, and, you know, when it's coming, like the one I said earlier, Help, Murder.
I think I've seen almost every Gene Wilder movie, and this performance, I mean, all of his performances are standout, but I think this is his best because his character is so over the top, but he's underplayed. You know, because you have a very snarky individual who does things his own way, who doesn't really care really about anybody else. But if you look into it deeper, he cares about the Oompa Loompas. He specifically picked Charlie. And I just, the whole thing, I just, is amazingly well played.
Yeah.
Definitely agree.
And I love the way they did the sets as well. I mean, the sets were so unique in their own way. The rooms that he took them in and the way that they brought this fantasy Candyland. I mean, this film made the Willy Wonka freaking franchise of candy. Well, which is some of my favorite candy out there.
Well, the candy was actually made after this.
Yes, I know, but I'm saying it brought that franchise and sold.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine what that scene would have been like, you know, the getting into the factory scene would have been like today. You know, with literally every backdrop CGI, there would be like the things that the kids handled specifically would be actually real.
I've said it a
thousand times, man. You need to be able to feel like you can reach through the screen and touch something. And oh man, I want to walk through that.
Yeah. When it comes to the remake, the only thing I wanted to reach the screen and strangle was Johnny Depp.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Brian brings up a fantastic point. There's a scene where Gene Wilder is singing and he sits down and starts drinking out of a buttercup. And then, after he finishes drinking it, he starts eating it. I mean, the way that they did a lot of these sets and the fact that the kids were running around and breaking fruit things open and finding candy and cream filling and all this stuff and just eating it all over the place. It's a wonderland, and the fact that, like Ryan said, the studio actually put that all together.
Imagine how much of that, James, you'll probably be able to figure this one out. Imagine how much of that was just literally spun sugar.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like really, really well done, like fondant or some type of sugar in a sculpture. I mean, some of that stuff was gorgeous.
Yeah.
I think one of the best things about the intro of this, you had Gene Wilder do the tumble bit, and you had the small rooms and the locks. I think the reason why they did that is to help you suspend your disbelief. It lets you let go of the fact that, oh, this didn't happen. This is, you know, that was the part I loved about this movie.
It kind of brings you into his world. You're like, you kind of understand like, oh, okay, this guy is a little off his rocker, but in the best possible way.
And I think that's I'd say the best thing, 100% the best thing about this movie is it let me be a kid again.
Yeah.
I watched this movie. I've seen this like at least 1,000 times in real life. And every time it allows me just to be a kid again and just like experience it like it's brand new. Like you hate that character who walks up to him and go, you know, I'll give you money if you give me this. And this is such...
It's not about money.
It's... I don't know. This movie's amazing. I could speak about it for hours and... Even the kids who were all kind of archetype characters, they were all individual enough that made you hate them or love them. And each one had their varying degrees of positives and negatives in them.
Yeah, like the cowboy kid.
my favorite one, though, is it Bianca? The chick
Veronica,
who, yeah,
something like that.
The chick who got it via her dad buying enormous boxes of chocolates and unwrapping all of them.
Yeah, I forget her name.
Baruka,
thank you.
Like you hated that character, but when you saw her and through her dad's eyes, you could see the love there. I mean, I don't think that's an easy thing to do with such an easily hateable character.
Well, and her lines are still quoted a lot by people. I want it now.
Yes.
Well, you know,
I want a bean feast.
One of the things I love most about this movie is they really blame all that shit on the parents.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, like basically, like, your daughter's a spoiled little brat because you're a crappy parent. Your kid does nothing but watch Westerns because you're a crappy parent.
Yeah. Versus Charlie,
it's like, oh, you know, despite your position in life and being, you know, bedridden, albeit, you know, not for a very good reason, apparently, jumping up and dancing. But despite your position, raising a really decent altruistic kid,
yeah,
you know, kind of made all the difference.
Yeah, well,
and they showed that very early on by the bread scene and by the he wanted to share his birthday present, which was a candy bar.
Yeah.
And you could still see him being a kid by playing the I've got the golden ticket joke, but you could see how he was such a lovable, good kid.
Yeah.
Well, and that moment comes out to me one of the most powerful moments in the movie, with the line, "I'll bet that ticket makes the chocolate taste terrible."
Yes.
So just like, you know what, I don't need these lofty dreams. I need to be able to stay here and take care of my family. He's just kind of trying to justify it in his head. Still has that dream of a kid wanting to do that, but
yeah,
you know what, it's okay because my family's more important.
I think for me, the most powerful scene in the entire movie was what I think it was Grandpa Joe said, a kid needs to hope for something instead of this. I'm heavily paraphrasing, but that was my favorite scene when you got to see how much everybody really loves this kid and is really upset the fact he's in this position, which yeah. You didn't hear any of the other parents even remotely say anything like that.
Yeah, and even at the end, you know, Grandpa Joe, you know, sort of turns around. He had a little bit of a sort of a jaded adult attitude about like oh well, my grandkid can't get this. Well, we're gonna do this then. And Charlie's like, you know what? That's not what I was here for. You know what I mean? Like, here's your everlasting gobstopper. And you know, obviously. First of all, I want that room with all that half shit.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, even just that pure innocence of a child, just like no, Grandpa Joe, it's not about that. It was, you know, I screwed up. I know what I did, and here you go. It's my fault.
Yeah,
which also helps you see the altruistic nature of Charlie when he gives everything up.
Well, nobody else owned their mistakes.
Yeah.
You know, nobody else said, hey, I'm sorry.
Well, in the end,
you
know, I don't
know if... He was the one kid that kind of knew that he screwed up.
In the end, I'm not sure if any of those kids survived. Like the television kid, take him to the stretching room.
Right.
When the Oompa Loompa comes up, oh, no, I won't blame you.
And I think the last time I saw anybody get that shrunk, it was was starring Martin Short. You know, Martin Short? Yeah, it was the movie about people getting shrunk and injected into somebody.
Oh. You're talking about Magic School Bus?
No. I just don't remember what it was called. God, this is such a great movie. I think the best thing about this movie, and I already stated it, is it allows you to become a kid again, which I think, especially as the older you get, is really hard to do. I think you get jaded in life, and part of that, I think it's simply because of Gene Wilder plays such a lovable character, even though he's snarky as hell. To me, this is one of the few movies that is a straight 5 out of 5. This, to me, is a perfect movie, or at least as close as you can actually get.
Yeah. Oh, man, I completely agree with you, dude. Absolute 5 out of 5 for the performance, but for the... This movie had everything, man. I mean, you know, even for a kid, I mean, like the suspense, not even just that particular moment that Wonka was referring to, but I mean that legit suspense when he starts going a little nutty with that paddle boat, you know, and
Daddy, I don't want one of these.
That he was kind of chanting. I mean, it brings you on a roller coaster. This movie is a straight up ride from beginning to end.
Yeah, I'm going to be the Russian judge. I'm only going 4.5, but, you know, I get all the points that you guys have, but for me, this is not my all-time favorite Gene Wilder. We've already done that one. Go back
he
and watch it.
He just likes Johnny Depp's version.
You know, I haven't even finished that one. I watched, like, 5 minutes of it, and I just wanted to shoot the damn
thing. I think I got, like, half an hour in, and I'm like, okay, this is just nothing but a rotoscoped acid trip. I mean,
and I've finished the actual Hobbit. The cartoon one from 1960 something. That's saying something.
I guess to
was it?
The one thing you got to tell, about James is he does stuff that most people don't. Like, he within a week watched all seven Phantasms, which
okay.
I don't know people who would remotely sit through all of them in, you know, a month, nevertheless sitting down and watching them all in a week.
That's okay. I did all the cubes around that same time, too.
Is
there more than two?
Wait, what?
Is there more than two?
Cubes?
I think there's three,
yeah.
I thought.
There's three, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's the cube zero and cube squared.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we're switching to our television portion, which is Arrow Season 1, Episode 1, and I'm going to hand it over to James.
You know, I like Arrow. I have watched this show. I'm almost completely caught up on the thing. Now, the first episode to me was always a bit slow at times.
I liked the
fact of how brutal he is when he comes back. Like, hardcore brutal. But for me, there was like too many unanswered flashbacks. He was on acid and just
do they ever reverting. Explain any of the flashbacks?
Yes, they do.
Okay.
Because they go into great detail in the first two seasons, at least.
So they were playing the long game with
this. Yes, that's my only issue with the first episode is that they didn't need to play as much of the long game as they did.
Because I've seen the first season, and I just remember going, wait a minute, this doesn't explain this, or explains that.
They did.
Yeah, it threw out so many questions in the first episode. It took a really long time to pay off. I appreciated the angle they were coming at it with. Obviously, this is kind of around the Dark Knight times and the Christopher Nolan Batman. So everyone was kind of into the really earnest take on Arrow. Now it did start to really lean heavily into like the extended universe and a lot more of the magic side. Not really the magic, but
Did you guys think that it was too earnest? Because that was one thing watching this.
I think it was too earnest for where they were going with it.
I agree with that, yeah.
Because I was watching the first season, I was like, this is a superhero show on a television, and I'm wondering if this is too Dark Knight-ish and not enough Super Friends.
Well, I liked how dark it was, but they tried to kind of ground it in almost too much reality for where it was going in like season three.
That was kind of what I thought, at least the first season.
I agree. The first two seasons, I think they played way too much catch-up in trying to make up for the first episode, it always felt like.
And why did it take the Flash to tell him to get a mask?
Well, see, that's the kind of thing that bugs me with the first two episodes. You got to let people know what kind of universe you're standing in.
Yeah.
Are we in this real life with a guy with a bow and arrow, or are we in the DC universe here?
Exactly. You know? Yeah,
I thought they did a really poor job at that part, was kind of telling you what exactly is...
Well, let me put it this way. This was one of those shows that if you made it through the first episode, like Ryan said, it gave you so many questions that it intrigued enough people to watch the next episode and the next episode. But like I said, it always felt like they were trying to play catch-up for how much crap they threw at you in the beginning instead of drizzling it on as.
But on the other hand, you got to give them credit because it seems like today you either get it's so episodic, there's no overarching story. Oh, it's so much overarching story that most of the season, the episodes don't really count. At least this had, I thought, an okay mesh of both, of balancing individual episodes with the overall story.
They did, and the other
not perfect.
The other thing I liked about this show is the fact that it was an adult show.
Yes.
It was not
something you didn't see too often on CW, for crying out loud.
No joke.
I was impressed just off of that.
Yeah.
CW should have been called the Teenage Network.
Yeah.
Man, I mean, her sensibility just went so Dawson's like Creek. Like, oh, every you know, middle-aged mom can watch all these shows with their 6-year-old.
Yeah.
This was the soccer mom channel.
Oh, it seriously was.
I mean, this is responsible for what? The Seventh Heaven, for Dawson's Creek.
Smallville?
Yeah. They did a lot of stuff that, you know, just, oh, dear God. So, ladies and gentlemen, we do have a Facebook page.
Yeah,
do us a favor. If there's a movie you want us to watch, let us know. Hey, if you hate us, be creative. No more you suck. Come on.
Yeah,
I know you can do better. And ladies and gentlemen.
We suck. Come on.
I just want to let you know we do have a Facebook. We do have a podcast on audio version. You can catch us on Podbean, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and more. And we're going into the movie news section of the show. And I purposely mentioned a movie earlier just so I could bring up this. They're remastering Phantasm.
Okay, remastering and not rebooting?
According to this, there's a new poster for the remastered edition of Phantasm, which I'll admit they're looking a little poor. So I actually kind of cool to see them actually kind of touching up and kind of cleaning them up versus completely reshooting them.
See, well, this is what we used to get back in the day, okay? In the mid-90s, they remastered and, you know, completely cleaned up all the Star Wars. You know, obviously, that's when they kind of changed a couple of things.
Yes, a couple.
And whatnot, which nobody still has forgiven them for.
Damn you, but George still, Lucas.
They didn't decide to reboot something. They just said, hey, look, here's kind of a prettier version of the one you used to like.
And they did the same with Raiders, didn't they?
Yeah, I think so. There was a few movies kind of around that time when things were transferring from VHS to DVD that they went back and, you know, redid the sound and...
It was a long time ago. I don't remember all that they did, but they did quite a bit.
That's one of the reasons I'm a really big fan of the Criterion Collection is I'm not a fan of all the movies there, but if there's a movie you like, they are literally the best-looking versions of that film you will ever find. I don't always agree with the choices they pick, but they're always amazing looking.
Yeah, if you have questions about what they pick, just get a hold of me. I have issues with Criterion, besides the fact that they have done some good stuff.
So Ben Affleck, may have pointed to the next villain he's going to face, and I'm actually really jazzed. So allegedly they might do Slade Wilson slash Deathstroke,
which will be would be really freaking cool.
Which will be his first introduction that I'm aware of on a DC tentpole movie.
Wait, on a tentpole movie? But okay. Didn't he go into Arrow?
Yes.
Yeah, but this
he was really a big player in Arrow.
Because he's been on things like the Teen Titans, which is a Cartoon Network cartoon. They definitely did the Arrow, and he might have been on other things, but this is the first time he's been introduced in the cinematic universe that I'm aware of.
I believe there were masks and stuff that were portrayed in different things, but yeah, not as a full-time role.
I'm really looking forward to seeing this, just to see how well, because he's a great... He's probably one of the few characters, I think, in the DC universe that you love to root for, even though you hate him.
Well, I'm a huge fan of the mercenary background for some of these characters, you know, like the soldier of fortune who had, you know, way better. Well, obviously the Deadpool and Deathstroke kind of in the same camp when it comes to that.
So I agree, but I disagree. Deathstroke isn't as goofy, unfortunately.
Well, of course not, but no. Like I'm saying, I love the mercenary aspect of a lot of these characters.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I have one more piece of movie news, unless you have something.
I was going to mention something. I was going to get Ryan all.
Okay. Well, let me mention one more thing before we go
in the nether regions.
So I want Ryan Reynolds is apparently a giant fan of Deadpool, which is obvious if you see it. He paid out of his own pocket to have the screenwriters actually on set when you had the studio who refused to pay him. That's pretty cool when the actor is willing to pay out of his own pocket to do the film. And this is, if you know anything about Deadpool, this is a movie he's been trying to do personally for a while.
Yeah, for a long, long time.
Yeah, and I'm not a big fan of Ryan Reynolds, but I love him in this one.
Oh, I think in real life he's pretty much Deadpool, because every interview I see him in, he's just snarky as hell now.
I've always been a Ryan Reynolds fan. I mean, obviously he's done some pretty, you know, goofy, you know, I mean, he kind of went through a big chick flick phase for a while, and nothing wrong with chick flicks, but everybody hates those really just dopey romantic comedies.
Did you hear that? He's backpedaling.
Yeah, he is. I think Amber's in the room.
She's going.
I could see her not watching as many chick flicks as Ryan does. Anyway. So
hey, that new movie Bad Moms is the shit. Okay,
that's a chick flick.
You also do what was it? Bad Teachers or what was that?
So
one?
So why don't you talk about the sort of movie that's going to make Ryan happy?
So Ryan, do you remember what happened about 17 years ago that supposedly changed the horror films forever?
No.
No. Should I?
Well, South Park did quite a bit of spoofs on it, of the Blair Witch Project.
Oh, Blair Witch. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So, why would they do a sequel to it 17 years later after there was already a sequel to it?
Well, this isn't really a sequel, is it?
Yeah, I thought it was more of like a
reboot.
Like a remake.
No, they're portraying it as a sequel. Yeah.
Okay. I don't know.
Now... am I the only one? Did you ever watch it, John?
I didn't want to.
Ryan, did you watch it?
Fuck yeah, I did.
Okay. Now, was that the most disappointing film ever?
Yeah, that's a shock to
me. Well, it was kind of a product of too good of viral marketing. Back in the day when viral marketing was not on the internet, it was literally like your school buddy saying like, oh, they found this footage and it's supposed to be real and you know what I mean, those kinds of
in that sense they did a fantastic job.
When it came to the viral marketing, you could have taught a class on how well it was done.
Yeah.
Well, the viral marketing for that movie is what everybody tries to duplicate now.
Yeah,
well,
with the found footage films.
And even back then, you know, like obviously, James, we're all in the same camp. I mean, we probably saw a few thousand movies by the time we were, you know, in fifth, sixth grade.
Yeah.
So I knew it was a movie. I didn't really have any expectations like that, but I'm thinking like, oh man, this movie must be something else. And it didn't live up to the incredible amount of hype that it had. It was definitely kind of groundbreaking for its time, and obviously some of the people have tried to copy over the years and the Paranormal Activities
are a great example of them trying to catch it.
The problem with the hype is I'd say most movies don't live up to it. I mean, when you talk about, was it Dark Knight Rises? Is that one the one Heath Ledger?
No.
Which one
Dark
was
Knight.
The Dark Knight.
Dark Knight, I was really worried that it wouldn't live up to the hype because the amount of hype and viral marketing for that movie was at the level of ad nauseum. And then you get to see the character, and this is the first movie I think I've ever seen that was greater than any viral marketing they actually produced.
I will agree with that. But for me, now, I didn't go out to the theaters to see The Blair Witch. I was not wasting my $7 at that time.
Damn, you're old.
It was probably less than that, actually. That was just me. Yeah, but I remember watching it, and I finally finished it. And I just remember thinking, like, that was it? That was it? What the hell? It was just so baffling at how lame that movie actually was.
I've heard it described as pretty much like a film school project that somehow slipped through the cracks.
Yeah.
That's kind of how it was. And it was sort of kind of letting you know, like, hey, look, movies are just about storytelling and you don't have to have the tentpole budget, you know, to make something that's really creepy or kind of hits you in a specific way.
12 Angry Men did that perfectly.
If you want to watch interesting found footage movies, go check out a flick called Willow Creek by Bobcat Goldthwait.
Oh.
It's basically a found footage movie about Bigfoot.
Or Troll Hunter, which is a movie we actually reviewed.
But what I'm going to say is this, the sequel or whatever the hell they're doing, it's been portrayed as a sequel as far as I've seen. You know, I'm actually going to watch it just to see if they've tried to make this better, if they've even tried to expound upon this, because it's just the utter disappointment and how lame that film was.
See, I think they could probably do better because it's 17 years after the fact. I think it leaves you time to see what other people have done, better writing, better effects. This movie could be the greatest one yet out of a very crappy movie.
Well, I'm thinking because how many Paranormal Activities are out now, Ryan?
Four.
Oh, I think five with that dumbass Ghost Dimension movie.
Okay. So, I mean, the first two of those were actually really well done.
Well, the first one, see, this is kind of the problem when you have that viral marketing where it's like, hey, what is this movie? Is it found footage? Who knows? You know, you have this buildup, this all this gunpowder behind that slug, and then the slug is gone.
Well,
and now
it's
people jumping behind the bullet trying to blow on it, getting it to go faster.
Yeah. I'll agree with you on that. But, I mean, after Blair Witch Project, I just kind of looked at all this crap with people like, oh, my God. It's like, okay, first of all, if it's being shown in a cinema, it's probably not really actual found footage. It's a movie, guys.
Matter of fact, if it's shown on History Channel, Discovery, or TLC, it's a good chance it's BS.
Yeah, anyways.
That being said, we need to switch to our movie pick, which is James's turn. So, batter's up.
So, Ryan and I were talking about this earlier today, just kind of messing with him a little bit. But, you know, I think we're going to go with Conquest of the Planet of the Apes.
Wow.
No, I'm totally screwing with you guys. Up in smoke, guys. Up in smoke.
I was going to say, wow, okay, that's an interesting
And we
pick.
Are also going to be doing, I don't believe we've touched the show yet, but The Strain, Season 1, Episode 4 is what we're going to be doing on that one. I forget the name of it. It's like something like Nobody Knows or something like that. Here, I'll pull it up. I had it right in front of me, and I closed it.
I still can't get over the Conquest of the Planet of the Apes. It's like, wow.
Oh, it's not for everyone. This is Season 1, Episode 4 of The Strain.
Just like Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, not for everyone.
Now, The Strain, if I'm not mistaken, is Guillermo del Toro, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Jeez. So, ladies and gentlemen, I gave Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory a 5 out of 5. James gave it a 4 out of 5. Ryan gave it a 5 out of 5.
Dude, give it a 0.5.
So, I gave it a 5 out of 5. James gave it a 4.5 out of 5. Ryan gave it a 5 out of 5. We're doing The Strain, Season 1, Episode 4. And as always...
And Up in Smoke.
Up in Smoke. And as always, we'll see you next week.
Goodbye. We'll be right back.